That's going to be the new Mishnah, enough from the Zion of the Beis. Then the Mishnah is going very, very far away from the sugyas of Gittin proper. We're actually talking about a whole array of different takanas and chavim that were made in the realm, particularly in the realm of Gittin Mamrus. Many of them is in this part, in the realm of Gittin Mamrus. It's called the same Tikkun Olam, just to kind of make things go a little smoother. Things that would let people almost take advantage of the rice and would end up with certain societal problems. So one of the examples, of course, that we spent the last couple of shiurim talking was Prisbal. It was a classic Tikkun Olam. They can affect that institute something in the Rabbanan just to make things go a little bit better. So here the Mishnah talks about a case that obviously very, very far removed from our world of Alach Lamaisa, but of course the sugya we learned enough of Lamazam, and the Mishnah begins, Eved Shemishba Upada'u. So one owns an Eved Kanani, and the Eved Kanani was taken captive by the non-Jews, and then the Jews went ahead and were potent. Somebody put up the money and was told to redeem this this captive, this Eved. So now the question is, what exactly is the status of this Eved after being redeemed? So there could really be one or two possibilities. He can go back to his original owner, or he can go back to the person who redeemed him, or he can go free. So that's what the Mishnah begins to discuss. So if the person was redeemed, the Eved was redeemed, but the person who redeemed him had in mind that he's going to remain as an Eved. He didn't plan on having him go free. He's planning on him remaining as an Eved. Then yishtabel. Then he remains an Eved. If he was freed with the explicit intent to, if he was redeemed with the explicit intent to free him, so then lo yishtabel, then he cannot make him work anymore. Now the problem, of course, the mission is very, very vague. We're not sure who the subject of this mission is. Are we talking about the original owner? Are we talking about the redeemer? So it's very unclear. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel over Beikach or Beikach Yishtabel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, doesn't matter, no matter what happens, he still can make him go back to where he was, being an Eved Kanani. So again, very unclear from beginning to end, who was doing what for who, and where does the original owner fit into this picture, and then we're very, very, very vague what the Mishnah is talking about. So don't feel bad if you don't understand the Mishnah, that's the most question. But my asking, but what are you talking about exactly? So there's one major fact here in terms of the Dinamans. Again, we've been trying, obviously that mindset, you know, it's hard for us to learn sugyas of avodah, with understanding, obviously, it's not relevant to Alach Lamaaseh for us anymore, but still just to almost like separate ourselves a little bit from the emotional side of the sugya, just to focus on other Dini Mamanus part. So the Gemara wants to know, what are we dealing with? Elay b'lifnei yush, if we're talking about that the original owner never gave up hope of getting this ever back. So we're almost invoking principles like Hashemah Saveda. The person loses something, so if they're still holding on for dear life, and they're going to get it back, so they are still the original owners of this item. So over here, he let the Yush, the Shum Ben Chorin, of my Yishtabel. So the fact that the person was very nice, and he did Pidgin Shruyim, and he redeemed my Eved, and he had in mind he's going to free my Eved. Sure, he had in mind he's going to free my Eved. It's my Eved. So the Eved belongs to me, so he can have in mind for the day from tomorrow. Am I least having? So if we're talking about prior to Yush, the mission doesn't make any sense. Ela la'acha Yush. So it must be that we're talking about Yush already happened. So the original owner is already out of the picture. It's like Lahavdal, like he lost his wallet, and he gave up hope of getting his wallet. But here, the Eved was taken captive. He's been gone for 10 years. The owner never thought he was going to see him again. So then why does the Mishnah say, Lashum Eved Ma Yishtabel? So why in the world does it go back to being an Eved? The original owner lost hope, so it's finished. The game's over. So the Mishnah really doesn't seem to make any sense. But I slice it. That one piece of important information, pre-Yush or post-Yush, either way, the Mishnah is not consistent. So I'm going to buy it.
Let's
see, it's Lachar Yush. So why is he Yishtabel? Why does he go back to the first owner? Well, if the first owner was Yishtabel, so that's what the Gemara is going to try to figure out who exactly is going to. At this point, the Gemara thinks we're talking about the only rights belong to the first owners. I'm going to buy it. The Olam Lifnei Yush. When the Mishnah said that the Eved was redeemed, it's talking about it's before Yush. Ulishum Eved Yishtabel L'Rabbi Rishon. If he was freed for the purposes of being an Eved, so he simply goes back to the original owner. There's nothing wrong with him going back to the original owner. It was before Yush. So the Eved was taken captive. We found the Eved. We redeemed the Eved. He goes back to Eved. He goes back to where it was before. But Shum ben Chorin, but if he's now redeemed for the purpose of freeing him, that gets a little bit tricky. Why? because the Shuman Chorin lo yishtavet, lo le Rabbi Rishon, lo le Rabbi Sheni. So now he doesn't become an Eved, neither to the original owner, nor to the second quote unquote owner, i.e. the Redeemer. Why is that? The Rabbi Sheni lo, he doesn't go to the second owner, that was Shuman Chorin bargain. Because he wasn't redeemed for the purpose of being an Eved. So the second, quote unquote, owner, can't even call the owner, but the Rabbi Sheni, the person who did the redeeming, if he didn't have in mind to acquire with an Eved, so the Rabbi Rishon Ami Lo. So why doesn't he go back to the original owner? So here the Gemara says, Chazal made a takon. What was the takon? The Mamim Ne'evil Aparke. Our goal here is to get this Eved out of captivity. That's what we really want to happen. Here we have a person who's an Eved Kenani. Nebuchadnezzar is part of the Jewish community. He's chayvet certain mitzvahs. He has to give Shabbos, he has to keep kosher. Okay, it's true. He doesn't wear tefillin, he doesn't count for minyan, he doesn't get married to regular Jewish girl. It's true, he has certain limitations. But he is considered to be part of Klal Yisrael, at least in some sense of the word. And now we're going to have a situation where he's now captured by the Goyim. So captured by the Goyim, who knows what they're doing to him physically? We know for sure what they're doing to him spiritually. It's a miserable situation now. He's being taken captive. Beforehand, he was living in our house. We were taking care of him. We were supporting him. He was keeping Shabbos. He was keeping kosher. He was on his path, trajectory to Geirus. And now, Nebuch, he's taken captive in the wild, wild west. So we want to encourage people to step up to the plate and redeem him. So if we're going to tell people that he's going to go back to being an Eved, where he was in the first place, so we're afraid people may not redeem him. People may think, yeah, the guy's doing an Eved anyway. Why should I put up $100,000 to redeem him? But if the person, we tell people that he's going to become a Ben Chorin, he's going to become free, he's going to become a regular Jew, so that would be a greater incentive for people to redeem him. So it's almost like playing a game with people. We're trying to encourage people. Here we see a guy's got a lot of money, he wants to redeem him, but we're afraid that since the Redeemer is only doing it on Manasseh, he should become free. If we turn him back instead of back to the master, that's going to undermine the entire system. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Mishnah didn't accept that. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Beikach or Beikach Ishtab. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, there's no need for this takona. There's no need for us to, in a sense, change the original. Then, why? Because some of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's understanding was, Kishem Shemitzvah Liftos Rechorin, Kach Mitzvah Navadim, that there's a mitzvah pidyon shvuyim, and the mitzvah the shvuyim applies to free people, and applies to Avon, and every Kanani has at least some degree, some kind of Kishisrael, and he has Chiyah Mitzvah to some degree, so he's part of Kaisro to some degree, and therefore there is a formal mitzvah to free him. So Rishon Gamliel says there's nothing to worry about. No one's going to be deterred from freeing him because they suspect he's going to go back to being a plain old Eved again. So let him go back to where he belongs. He was the original owner, was the owner, is the owner, will be the owner until he decides that it's open for him. There's no need for us to tamper with halacha, and we don't have to be concerned that people aren't going to redeem the captives. The machlokes, the first time of Rishon Gamliel, is a very, very technical machlokes. Should we institute a takana that he goes free in order to be as an incentive for people to redeem him? The Chachamim were worried about that, and therefore they made such an incentive. And Rishon Gamliel said, there's no need to make that incentive. So this is all Abaye's version of the Mishnah. Rav Amar, Rav had an entirely different reading of the Mishnah. The Olam, the Ache Yush. We're actually talking about after Yush. So the first master is pretty much out of the picture right now. The Shum Eved, when the Mishnah says that when he's redeemed to be an Eved, Ishtabed, Rabbi Shady, it doesn't mean he goes back to the original owner. The original owner gave up hope a months ago. It means he goes to the second master, the Shum and Chorin, Ishtabed, Rabbi Rishon, Rabbi Shady. But if the Redeemer redeemed him in order to free him, then he does not go to become an Eved. Why is that? The Rabbi Shady, now the Shum and Chorin bargain. So he doesn't go to the second master, because the second master doesn't want him. The second master redeemed him and wanted to free him, so I'm not going to send him to work for him. The Rabbi Rishon Ami Lo, and he doesn't go back to the original owner, the original owner gave up hope. So the original owner is for sure not entitled him. The second owner is for sure not entitled him. So today's his lucky day. He doesn't have one master, he doesn't have a second master. So he, in fact, goes free. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no. We don't want that to happen. That is a bad, bad outcome of this scenario, that the person is taken as a captive, he ends up getting redeemed, and he ends up getting free. Why is that a bad scenario? There is a simple reason. Chizkiya said, we have to be concerned with the following. Why did Chazal make the statement? Why did some Tanoi make the statement that even though it's post-Yush, so he really doesn't belong to the first guy, the second guy doesn't really want him, we can't let him go free. We are afraid that an Eved is simply going to volunteer to get kidnapped. So it's a good way out of being an Eved. He's not interested in being an Eved anymore. So what does he do? He goes and he hands himself over to a bunch of thugs who are more than happy to take over. And then they're going to jack up the price and force the Jewish community to start ransoming him. That's the last thing you want to do. When it comes to ransoming, you know, captives, Pidyon Shvuyim, Chazal were always very, very nervous about the mitzvah Pidyon Shvuyim. Because on one hand, it's a tremendous mitzvah, and we have to save people from Nebuchadnezzar, Rechman Lotzlan, somebody ends up getting captive. So the Jewish community traditionally, throughout the years, it will turn the world upside down to ransom captives. On the other hand, the last thing you want to do is to give... an incentive to the kidnapping trade. So the more that's why they're singing a little bit later on in Gittin, about what if a regular person gets kidnapped, and the price is so astronomical, so the halacha is that you're not supposed to redeem it, because it's terrible, as tragic as that is, if we give in to cave into those demands, it's just going to set us up for the next time around. This is, of course, I was part of the modern day discussion about, caving to terrorist demands. When you, on the one hand, obviously we want everybody to be safe and healthy and back. The other hand, it's an unbelievable cheshbon that something has to be made, because otherwise it will never solve. Because if you cave into one set of demands, the next thing is going to be the price is only going to go higher. So the last thing we want to do is create a society where Avadim voluntarily, quote unquote, getting themselves kidnapped, and then turning around to the Jewish community and say, please free me, please redeem me. So therefore, some of the Tanaim were afraid that if the Eved sees this as a green light to his freedom, so that's going to set up this problem. That's going to cause him to set us up into a very, very bad position.
So, Rishon from Leo, if the Eved's part of the group that's captive, he would be kosher.
But that's what the Gemara is going to talk about a little bit later, about what if it's clear from the context that wasn't the Eved's intent. So basically, the Gemara is going to try now to figure out which is the correct pshat of this Mishnah. We have two radically different pshat of the Mishnah. According to Abaye, we're talking about pre-Yish. According to Rav, we're talking about post-Yish. So basically, I'm going to Rav Shimon Gamliel. So the Brice says, Rav Shimon Gamliel responded to the Chachamim. K'shem shemitzvah liftos is mecharin, kach mitzvah liftos is avadim. The reason that Rav Shimon Gamliel gave for his statement of why he goes back to be an Eved is because, no problem, there's a mitzvah to redeem both. So that statement was only true in Abaye's version of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Because according to Abaye, that's exactly what Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying, that don't worry, don't be concerned, people aren't going to redeem them. Everyone will redeem them, because it's a mitzvah to redeem them. So Mishnah Abaye, the almost day Yush, according to Abaye, who says that the Machlokes was before Yush, Hainu de Kaaba Kishayim. So now we understand what Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying. Ella the Rav, the Yomel Yacha Yush, according to Rav, who says that Rav Shimon Gamliel was talking about after Yush. And the punchline, the point of Rav Shimon Gamliel arguing was because of Chizkiya, because we're afraid the Avadim are going to sell themselves as they're going to get themselves kidnapped. Hai Kishay, Rishum de Chizkiya. The reason that Rav Shimon Gamliel should have given to argument that Chamim should have been the reason of that Chizkiya presented, that we don't want to let him go free lest he turn himself voluntarily into being a prisoner. So basically, Rav Shimon Gamliel said the wrong reason. Rav Shimon Gamliel is trying to defend his position by invoking a reason that's not really true. So Amalek Rav, so Rav will say to you as follows. Rav Shimon Gamliel, lo ha-viyadim ha-kam Rabban, a startling statement that Rav says, Rav Shimon Gamliel wasn't even sure what the Chum themselves were saying. That we don't have to feel bad if we don't understand Pshat in the Mishnah. Yeah, but Rav didn't understand Pshat in the Mishnah, and the Tanaim weren't even sure what the Chum were saying. The whole discussion was so unclear. So Rav Shimon Gamliel said to the Rabban as follows. Even if they Yush Kamri, so if your concern is it's before Yush, Hanukkah, so then I'm going to respond to you and say, don't worry, let him go free, nothing to worry about. And let him go back to revert to being an Eved, nothing to worry about. Because Kishayim, everyone's going to redeem him anyway. Kishayim should mitzvah lift us up, Kach mitzvah lift us up. Iliach Yush Kamri, so, but Rav Shimon Gamliel said to the Rabbanan, if you're talking about the Yach Yush, and that's why you're saying what you're saying. So then, Kiddichiskiya. So then I'm going to respond to you by saying that we cannot let him go free, because doing so is going to end up causing more problems in the future. So Rav and the Amal the Achi Yush. Now the Gemara turns around and Rav and says, "We're talking about after Yush, and we're going to send them back to the Rabbi Sheni. Rabbi Sheni, Riman Konile. How does the Rabbi Sheni have any rights there? The Din this? Bishma with the original master. I understand. 20 years ago, this fellow voluntarily sold himself to the Rebbe. The master never won, so he entered into a business deal. So now he stopped. Now he's in heaven. I understand." But how in the world does Rabbi Shevi get any monetary rights to this fellow? The only zchus that the Rabbi Shevi has is because he redeemed him. He redeemed him from Gazlonim. He redeemed him from Ganovim. So where in the world did he get any Mamas right to keep him as an Evan? Mishavoy from the Shavoy, from the kidnappers, Shavoy Gufay Mikonilai. Did the original kidnappers have any rights to him? Any kinyan on him that they can now transfer over to the Redeemer? Gemara says, yeah, in Kanele Maisiyadov. Gemara says that is the din that if the Shavoy, if the kidnappers, they stole him, they kidnapped him, but they get a certain degree of a kinyan on him, vis-a-vis Maisiyadayim, the following, Yamar Shlomish. Minayim of Gicham, Shekonis of Gicham, the Maisiyadov. If there is a concept of an Evet Kanayni actually between two Goyim, we usually think of an Evet Kanayni meaning that a Goy sells himself to a Jew, so he belongs to the Jew, there's a special kinyan that the Jew has over the non-Jew. So we usually think that model of Evet Kanayni is only non-Jews to Jews. So here comes the Gemara and says that model exists partially between two non-Jews as well. So what does that mean? So the Gemara is going to qualify that one non-Jew does not own the other non-Jew. There's no real model of Evet Kanayni in the full sense of the word, but there is a kinyan of Maisei Adayim. It's possible that one non-Jew can own another non-Jew vis-a-vis insisting that he works, vis-a-vis having zechuyos, vis-a-vis having halachic privileges to getting whatever a salary, whatever work, whatever the ma'aseh adayim are of the other person. How do you know that such a concept even exists? We look at the Chumash Torah, doesn't speak about that explicitly. The Torah speaks about the ma'al of an Evet Ivrim, the Torah speaks about the ma'al of an Evet Kanayni, but the Torah never speaks, at least explicitly, about one non-Jew having any koach, any dini mamonis over another non-Jew. The Gemara says, no, it does. So the Torah, the end of Parshas Bahar, speaks about the model of an Evet Kanayni, that the Evet Kanayni sells himself to the non-Jew, sells himself to the Jew, so he belongs to the Jew. So the Torah uses the phrase, mehem tiknu, from them you purchase. I.e. Reuven is buying John. Says the Torah, Shabbat, atem kod mehem. That means Reuven can buy John. The other way around doesn't exist. There's no way for a non-Jew to own a Jew as an Evet in the full sense of the word. And including that drasha of you from them, but not vice versa, and not one from another, not one non-Jew from another. So the Gemara goes on and says, Yachol or Yifruz Zeh. So I might think that it's really true. John can't buy a Paul. It's impossible for one non-Jew to buy another non-Jew. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's not going to be true. Yachol or Yifruz Zeh, Hamas Lahim Kodim. That's what you just said. So the Bryce, the statement of Ishlach doesn't read smoothly. Ishlach says that you can buy from them, but they can't buy from you, and they can't buy from each other. I might think they can't buy from each other. What kind of statement is that? You just said they can't buy from each other. So Rish Lakish qualifies what he meant. Talking about that unique relationship that a Yisrael has to an Evet Kanayni, Yisrael owns the Gufa Evet, literally belongs to him. So I might think that one non-Jew can do that to another. So I might think that just as John can't own Paul, the real kid in Aguf, I might think there's no such relationship of a Maisi Adayim. Let's say one non-Jew comes to and says, listen, I want to be your servant. I want to sell myself. Give me 10,000. I'm going to sell myself, commit myself for life to be your servant. So such an agreement exists. Nobody told him to do it. But if he wants to enter into such a relationship, you have a right to do so. And it's binding. It's binding in the sense of now you have. It's like, I sold my car, I sold my house, I sold my Maisei Adayim to somebody. So one non-Jew can become the Evet, so to speak, of another. He doesn't become his Gufa Evet, never really acquires. One non-Jew doesn't have the koach to acquire the body of another person, but he does have the ability to acquire Maisei Adayim. So comes the Gemara and says, where does that come from? What's the source of that idea of a kid in Maisei Adayim? Amos Kavachana. that kinyan of a ma'aseh yadayim, even a non-Jew can have against the Jew. The Torah speaks at the end of Parshas Bahar of a terrible, terrible situation. A person is so poor that he wants to sell himself as an Eved Ivri, and no one's interested in buying him. So he goes to his non-Jewish neighbor and says, I'll be your Eved. So the Torah says, that's buying him. And the Torah says that once Reuben sells himself to John, he's obligated to work for John. And the Torah says that we're not allowed to cheat John. If we want to redeem him, we should try to get Reuben out of this mess that he got himself into, try to bring him back to Jewish employment opportunities. But we can't just take him in the dark of night to sneak out of John's house. The Torah says that you have to be careful. You have to pay John back every last penny that he spent on this guy. So John invested $100,000 to buy Reuben. So John owns Reuben's Maisi Adayim for X amount of time. And if we want him to go free, we have a right to buy John out. And we should try to buy John out. And we can force John to buy him out. But you can't cheat him. That's the verse. And that's actually one of the sources that Gezel Akam is also. The verse says, the end of Bava Kama, where does it say in the Chumash itself that even stealing from a non-Jewish prohibited? So Mike gives this as a source. Here, John bought the rights of Reuven. And even though rightfully so, we want Reuven out of there as quick as possible, but we can't do it at the expense of cheating John. So the Gemara says that if there's a relationship that John should own Reuven, how much more so could John own Paul? One non-Jew could own another non-Jew. So the Gemara now goes on to say, well, let's just work through the details of this. How does this happen exactly? How does it happen that one non-Jew ended up owning the other non-Jew? Maybe that's true if he actually spent money on him. If he literally bought him, paid for him. That's the model that the Torah describes in Parshas Bahar. The Torah speaks about a person selling themselves off to a non-Jew. So the Torah says, b'kesef b'knoso, that was literally with cash. B'chazok alone. How do you know that even with chazoka, like in this case of the captives of the prisoners, so here there was no money that was given. One non-Jew basically stole another. He basically took him as an eved. He took him as someone who's going to work for him. So where does that idea come from that you could theoretically end up with taking somebody else's property and potentially acquiring it? So Amar Papa, so Papa gives a very, very startling source. Amon Umoav Tiaru B'Sichon. So there is a halacha that first that has nothing at all to do with this topic. It's a topic what's called the kibush milchama. The topic that when you have one country goes to war against another country, so in a certain sense, whether they should have gone to war, not have gone to war, whatever the chishbonos are, right or wrong, the mice, there's a certain concept of what they conquered in war, so they now own basically. Dini Mamonis understands that and accepts that concept. Called Kibush Bechama. So one of the sources for Kibush Bechama is from Psukim that appear in Sefer Devarim, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us that although we're going to receive Eretz Yisrael, but the lands, certain parts that were part of the Yerusha of Ammon and Moab, we're not going to take. HaKadosh Baruch Hu warns us in Parshas Devarim, don't take Ammon's land, and don't take Moab's land, that was given to them, and don't take Edom's land. Certain areas are adjacent there to Israel that were given to other nations, and we had no right to take. But then the Pesukim described, actually, at the end of Sefer Midrash, Parshas Chukas, the Torah describes that there were certain lands that originally that were destined for Ammon and Moab that ended up getting lost by Ammon and Moab to Sichon. Sichon was Melech Amori. So in theory, the Jews were entitled to take the land of the Amorim. They weren't entitled to take the land of Ammon and Moab. The problem was that the Amorim stole the land of Ammon and Moab. But the verse says that once Sichon went to war against Ammon and Moab and he captured that land, so it was no longer Ammon and Moab's property. That was Sichon and Amori's property. And now the Jews were able to take it. That's, in fact, the east side of the Yarden, the east bank of the Yarden. So that was land that originally was designated for Ammon and Moab. It was taken in war by Sichon. It's a psukim explicitly in Parshas Chukas. And then eventually, Klai Yisrael conquered it from Sichon. So Gemara uses the phrase, Ammon and Moab tiharu b'Sichon. They became purified through Sichon. A little bit of a strange application of the word purification. But it means that there was an Isser on these lands. We weren't allowed to take them. And now, Baruch Hashem for Sichon, that he took them. And then we were able to conquer them from Sichon. So the Gemara says, and you see that the Torah does recognize this concept a little bit of a kibush bochama. So it says the Gemara Ashkar Avigichavim. So I understand the parish of kibush bochama, one non-Jew taking from another non-Jew. Avigichavim Yisrael Manolim. How do you know that in theory, if a non-Jewish nation goes out to war and takes Jewish captives, so in a certain sense, they own them. There's a certain concept of a kibush bochama. So the Chsiv Ayish B'Merushevi, it's a pasuk also in Bashas Chukas, it describes when Yisrael in the Midbar, the very end of the 40 years of the Midbar, they ended up being attacked by by Melech Arad, Chasorim, Yochem Yisrael, Yishbem Shevi. So the Torah describes that they conquered them, that the Goyim actually won the first battle. They took some captives, and they owned those captives. Those captives became owned by the Goyim. Eventually, the Jews prevailed, and they were able to overcome, they were able to win the war. But the initial stages of the first battle, where they actually lost, so Yishbem and Shevi, so that whatever was taken by the Goyim actually belonged to the Goyim. So this idea of Kibush Mechama really does exist. Interesting, there's something Shem was saying, that this idea of Kibush Mechama is ultimately the source for another principle that we follow, of course, Ariyam Azeh, called Dina D'Mechus Adina. Why is it that we have to observe in the realm of Dina Mechus is the law of the land? The king says, you have to do such and such. The king says, you have to pay taxes. The king says, I'm going to take away your property. We spoke about this in a little bit earlier on the first part. Why is that bad in halacha? So some should say it's a corollary of the sunya. It means the king owns the land. So when King George conquered the land, when, I don't know, he fought the French, the Indian, whoever was fighting who. So now the land belongs to England. So now he is the rightful owner of that land. Now we have other people who go ahead and conquer that land from him. So they become the, in a sense, the rightful owners of the land. So in the realm of Melchamas, the realm of Kibush, so there is a certain concept that land does change ownership, that if there's a real war that's taking place, so land does change ownership, and now whoever is the rightful owner of the land right now, so he has to be respected, his laws have to be followed, because he owns the land. You don't like it, take it away, so don't live in it, go live in another land. So, of course, that concept of Dina Mechus Adina gets a little bit trickier when you're dealing with the democracy, and we're not dealing like days of old, where, you know, King Louis VIII is fighting King Henry VI, and you know, he's bopping him over the head and taking his land away from him. So we have land that now is a democracy, so it becomes a little bit trickier. So Dina Mechus Adina flies in a democracy also, but it's the original model of a melech taking over another melech, for most of us, Baruch Hashem, doesn't apply anymore. So the bottom line is that we have this, again, very, very vague Mishnah, and we couldn't quite tell whether we're talking about pre-Yish, post-Yish, we're talking about the first master, the second master, a lot of moving pieces, very variables in terms of this. So hopefully that's over the next year. So we'll try to continue the Gemara a little bit. Some more applications, a couple of stories, some very strange stories about how this really was actually put into practice, the idea of the Eved being taken captive and free, etc. Thank you.